Welcome to Teach Right, the podcast for first-time instructors, experienced instructors, and anyone else interested in learning how to teach writing. I'm Daniel Anderson, and we're coming to you from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. We have a number of guests with us today, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
I'm Tyler Elrod. I'm a first-year PhD student, as is everyone else in this room.
Gray Underwood, also first-year PhD student.
I'm Mitch Lucido, similarly first-year PhD student here at UNC.
I'm Charlotte Scott, another first-year PhD student and first-year, first-time writing instructor.
Simone Sparks, first-year PhD student.
Fantastic. Well, today our topic is peer review, and we do have an article that we looked at called Peer Critique as a Signature Pedagogy by Jennifer Heinert, but mostly I want to get the experiences from all of you who are instructors teaching using peer review. So what should our listeners know? What's one of the most important things you all would want to talk with them about in terms of peer review?
I'm thinking explicitly just because I held a peer review session in my intro writing class on Monday that I did not think went well. And this was probably the first experience that I've had where I gave a peer, like I held a peer review class session and I walked away thinking, well, I'm unfulfilled as an instructor here. I don't think that I walked out a little frustrated. But I imagine too that my students probably walked away not having gotten out of that session what they ought to have.
What do you think they were missing?
The big problem for me is that I gave them a list of sort of questions to look for. So specific sort of genre-based questions in the sort of reviews that they were writing that I wanted them to think about and basically answer. And they were generally open-ended questions. So I expected that they'd be able to pull a decent amount of information. They were supposed to write up a whole thing for that as they're reading their partners, and then they're going to spend the second half of class sort of talking about it. But most of the groups finished, and I'm like using air quotes, but it's a podcast, I can't see that, very quickly the talking about section. And I was like, well, you guys don't have to just talk about these individual questions. But it felt experientially to me like they were just wholly disinterested in the project and or like the project of peer review. And so there was a little bit of pushback there that I was then struggling to get them back into the task. I don't know if anyone's ever experienced something like that before.
Yeah. What I was going to say when we started was that I also did peer review this past week. And my number one advice for peer review is not to ask your students whether or not they like peer review, because they're going to tell you no. And then you have to figure out how to trick them into doing peer review, which is what I attempted to do this last week. So I came into class, similarly had them break into groups, put up a list of questions on the board, and these were groups of two. And this was not under the guise of peer review. This was, you know, for context, we had our feeder 2.2 in the night before, and then had them read each other's work, see if they came to some similar conclusions or see what they could pull out of or tease out of their feeders and have them communicate about that. And then we came back to a big class discussion, and that was where the trick was in that, I think, or the attempted trick was in that. And I kind of found I had a similar experience to you. They very quickly and you know, of course I had to involve myself in this, but very quickly the conversation turned to Shrek.
It was chess.com.
Yes. And then we got into the class discussion and they just seemed tired. And so I don't know if it's that transition from here, the specific questions to class or what, but I experienced something similar to you in the sense that they just didn't seem, my trick didn't work and they still hate peer review. So
what was your trick?
I feel like maybe it was partly to do with like the truncated group number. I typically will have them break into, I have three groups of four, one group of five. So that'll typically take them almost to the end of class because it'll take them, let's say, you know, 6 or 7 minutes maybe to read through and then, you know, another 6 or 7 minutes to give feedback you know, sort of a round table type situation. So it might help if, you know, sort of put them into larger groups and see, but
yeah, here's
sure what the structure of your assignment is.
Less so the structure of the assignment, more so the structure of the classroom itself. Not super conducive to groups larger than two, because it's the classroom I'm in is a big circular conference table that fits every student at it.
That's crazy.
But it doesn't fit. No one can move, you know, getting up and going to the bathroom is difficult. So like,
that's tough.
Organizing groups and having them move around in that classroom is not great. I mean, this is not a complaint about the classroom, though. I actually really like the classroom because it makes standard class discussion
totally
incredible. In fact, they love it. They've gone on record and saying they like the space.
Wait, so it's one big oval? Or
everybody's looking at each other. Like it's a big oval.
Okay.
Everybody's looking at each other in the face the entire class.
What building is that?
Caldwell.
There's like some special name for that. I went to a high school where they had some of those tables. There's like a special, I don't remember what it is for the table size and
colloquium room or
something. Yeah, something like that. But
sounds nice.
Yeah,
I know it's regular nice. Like big group and me dynamic. Mm-hmm. I really don't love that. Yeah.
I am too, but it makes it easier for the students to move around.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been rethinking my peer review. I've been talking to other people, and it seems like I have a class that is just unusually willing to do various things. Like they seem to enjoy the peer review, or at least I have at least a handful of people who will say like, "Oh, yeah, the peer review was really helpful." But I recently did a major sort of revamp of my peer review. I didn't do a lot of it in college. And again, as like a first time teacher, I was, you know, not exactly sure what it even would look like or what varieties of like a peer review worksheet people did. So my initial conception was having like a lot of questions, essentially, several of which were just like checking to make sure students were fulfilling aspects of the assignment. So those could just be like a yes or a no, actually, which is part of why I'm moving away from it. And then towards the end, I'd ask them to reflect on, you know, like some recommendations for revisions and then also something that they appreciated or thought was good. And I was just having them do this in groups of two. And we did that for a while, but I started to notice this last unit that they would sort of like, I would have them fill that out and then they would talk. And so it was a long silence. And I suspect sometimes students were like getting through it quickly and not writing that much when I started to look back at their responses. And so just for the last peer review, I had like a list of questions. I also pasted in an overview of like the essentials of the assignment, because a lot of times students will just still forget how many sources they need or like stuff like that. And then I had questions that they could talk about. And then I had them talk to each other. And then the thing that they produced would be like five or more sentences, like a little sort of summary of the conversation they had. Some of them seemed to like that more, although I did notice some of like the responses I was looking at didn't have anything like they missed something like, oh, what should this student actually change? For some of them, it was just kind of like, here's a list of things that I liked.
Yeah.
But this is making me think of something that Heinert says in the article that we had read, which stood out to me. And it's, you know, 296 into 297, this question of what is produced in a peer review session, and how do we, more importantly, sort of for this section here, like how do we assess that learning? And what you're saying here kind of like is making me think of, I have in the past asked for students to turn in reflections after peer reviews, or I have often asked them to create some sort of a document that outlines, okay, in response to the feedback that I got in peer review, here's what I plan on.
That's what I do too.
Changing. And I didn't do that this past time.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's part of what caused the sort of like fallout at the end, which was they were like, yeah, well, I shared my comments. I don't care anymore because I don't actually.
Yeah.
I had my students, I don't know how this is going to go, because I had them do it asynchronously to like, so that they could spend however much time they needed to without comparing themselves to other people, which is, so I have them do a reverse outline. I have them pair up in two and then they make reverse outlines for each other. Mm-hmm. And then like, so then they make just that. And then I give them a guide for like, in the reverse outline, name the describe the paragraph. And then like in each paragraph, say like, was this clear or not? And if not, like, what should they do? And it takes a long time. And it also, but I think it's good for them to get that skill down. So I guess that's kind of what's produced for mine. And I don't think it went well the first, it actually went atrociously the first time because I just thought it wouldn't take them as long as it did. And I realized that was an accessibility issue. So now I guess we'll see this weekend to see, like, yeah, if they actually, like, took the time to invest in it and do the full assignment and stuff. But, yeah, I don't know. No, you're fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to go back to this question Mitch asked about what's produced, because now I'm thinking, like, we're all kind of touching on the telos, like, what the students produce at the end, like, what's the end product. But I think one of the helpful things about peer review, at least for me, and when I've had to peer review in the past, is it teaches, it almost helps the reviewer more than the reviewee.
I think so, too.
Because they learn how to ask questions. So if you learn how to ask questions of another person's writing, then you can start to ask those questions of yourself as a writer. So I don't know. One thing I like to do when I do peer review, which has been scant this semester, but I like to tell them just to leave like two to three questions on a paper, and that, like, you know, realistically, no one's gonna, outside of two to three people, are going to run out of bandwidth for that kind of thing. So
yes.
I'd also like to highlight, too, the fact, sort of going off of what you said, Tyler, the fact that, you know, it really helps them, I think, with clarity as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and there are certain students that's sort of their main issue in their writing is, you know, you've got all the ingredients here on the page, but it's not organized in a way that's conducive to, you know, a potential reader understanding what your argument is and what you're trying to say. It's not logically organized. And so, you know, I always tell my students, you know, like the old trick of, like, you know, don't just like don't just go through and do a cursory proofread, you know, read your paper out loud to yourself. And it's like, you know, I'm not there watching them when they're at home, obviously. So, you know, who knows how many, if any, of them actually do that. But when you're in a peer review situation, it kind of forces you to, you know, confront your own writing and hear it read back to you. And then it's like, okay, so you, by hearing, you know, your sentence structure, you can then tell, it's like, okay, this is worded awkwardly, or this is, you know, not phrased in a legible or cogent way. So, yeah, I think it's a big, you know, I think peer review is a big boost for, you know, clarity as well.
I definitely agree with that. And I do think that a lot of the best parts of peer review, like this article sort of highlights, are honestly in sort of intangible things. And there's a social aspect, yeah, too, that like, even if maybe some of my students didn't write like super comprehensive responses at using this new approach that I've tried, like, they're still talking to each other and have, like, I've set aside time in your classroom, you know, when your students are talking about an assignment, talking through things they might understand or not understand, things that are confusing to them. Like, I think it impacts the class environment, and it instills some of those, like, the article talks about habits of mind. And I remember in our last conversation, we spoke about writing process and sort of like, what are we actually even teaching these students? And I think after now halfway through the semester, I've sort of grown even more attached to the idea that a lot of what we're teaching them is ways of thinking. And that is a lot of times the most, like, transferable skill that they'll have, whether that's dealing with their own writing anxiety, dealing with the fact that they might not know how to approach an assignment. Like, I have my students, I'm requiring them to go to the writing center once.
Good.
And to come to talk to me in my office hours once. And so I'm trying, like, some of these things, maybe it doesn't produce a specific product for me or for them in this class, but I'm trying to sort of help them understand their toolbox, yeah, that they have, the resources they have access to, and also just not feel necessarily so tense and stressed about writing, to see it as something more flexible, which is one of those values that was on the list in the article. So I think a lot of what we're talking about is different ways of doing that. But I still feel like my peer review process, like, I would benefit from looking at more examples of how people do that. So it's helpful to hear how everyone here has been, yes, approaching it.
I mean, the flexibility that you're talking about is somewhat twofold, because it's like, we're asking flexibility from the students, but there's also a degree to which, as you're kind of saying, like, asking for models, like, there's a flexibility in how we as instructors have to run individual peer review sessions, because I think the peer review session, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the peer review session has to be molded to the thing that they're working on.
Yeah.
You can't ask them the same questions or to look for the same things for every single assignment, because it's not going to make a ton of sense.
Right.
Like my first unit, they were doing a more just typical academic argument type paper. So in that first one, one of the tasks for them, for the peer reviewers, was to find what the thesis is, mm-hmm. and like, you know, find that individual sentence. Is that sentence what is then being proved the rest of the way? But in this second assignment, where I had them looking at media like film, TV shows, albums, and providing a review of those, there's not as much of a distinct, like, I'm going to have a, in this essay, I will argue type of a moment. So I had to then pivot what they were being asked to do. But I sometimes think that that flexibility can be a little bit foggy and can make the process a little bit.
Or they realize it while they're doing it, what you wanted them to do. Like, you had pivoted it and you had pivoted the paradigm that they're operating within, and then they don't know what to do, and then they ask you why you don't know, they don't know what to do, and then you explain to them that that was actually the framework the whole time. And then that's the moment in which,
yes,
like, these things become apparent. That's what I'm noticing for, like, my projects for sure, is, like, now that they're approaching the end, I'm like, this is where we started. And I think that's got to be okay. I don't know. Like, that it's, like, realized sort of late or something, and that's maybe I could have helped scaffold it earlier, but maybe not.
Maybe not. I mean, I did have one student who I was asking them on Wednesday. This is the class period after the peer review, when they'd basically gone and turned in the thing. We were just debriefing experientially about the project. And one of the students actually kind of like called me on the pedagogical thing that I was hoping for them to do. Because in the first in the first unit, I'd given them sort of the two things, that the two readings that I want them to work between. And then this one, they had a lot more freedom to go out and do some research to find some stuff. And it's like, oh, you know, it was almost harder because I didn't have the work right in front of me that I needed to work between. I had to go find it. And I was like,
that's exactly that's exactly what my class is right now. And it's been really funny. It just added a week of time to the schedule, really, because I was like, okay, let's slow down and let you do that or something. Yeah.
But yeah, I guess it's just, I think I became a little cynical about the whole process of peer review this week, which was unfortunate.
It's okay.
Just because it like didn't work out. So I was like, while some of it worked out in our debrief after the fact, I think they were able to like meta-reflective pull out some things. The actual in the moment peer review, I was starting to question whether it was like worth spending the class period doing, because I just felt like I was pulling teeth a little bit. Like I walked over, and this was bad of me, but I walked over because one of the groups, there's three students there, were just like sitting on their phones. I was like,
damn.
Hey, what, like, I guess you guys are all finished. And they're like, yeah, we kind of talked about everything. I was like, cool. So the essays are perfect.
Right.
And like, that was a little, like,
no, I think that's okay.
But I have like enough rapport with those students that I think it was fine. But of course, they got the message and they're like, well, I guess there's like a couple of questions we could talk about.
Sorry, it's so funny. It's so endearing to me, these moments. I don't know.
So I don't know. I don't really know what to do with those sorts of moments or problems, or if there's like a way to.
I have a question too, whenever you're done. You go ahead.
Okay. Usually I'll just cut it off at that point. Like, I'll, you know, because. There have been instances where I've had maybe like 15 minutes left in the class, and I noticed that, like, you know, almost all the tables are going silent or their conversation is shifting. And so I'll just, like, you know, assume that everybody's gotten their two cents in. And then I'll, you know, we'll move on to another activity, or I'll introduce the assignment for next class and, you know, something like that, to kind of like, you know, fill the time and not just leave them sort of hanging there, engaged in just casual discourse. But
yeah,
no, I think that, I mean, maybe that's actually the key there. I'm thinking, like, in the article at one point, it said, like, as educators, we want to help, to tell, to answer, to mentor, to facilitate, but cultivating the buzz of peer review requires pulling back. And maybe it is just the fact that I'm not I'm not like willing to pull back and just assume that my students have, oh, well, if they're done talking, like if they're sitting on their phone, it's actually because they're like they've accomplished the task.
How long did it take before they were just chilling?
I mean, not long enough that I truly believe that they.
I feel like I don't believe it either, but yeah.
But like, but that's I guess the tension,
sure,
and the like flexibility that I guess I don't yet bring, which is that like maybe I do need to just believe in their expertise.
This ties into the question I want to ask. May I ask it? I don't want to derail. Okay, so from she talks about this in the Heinrich talks about this in the article on the bottom of 300, but she's talking about because my frame here is I'm trying to like kind of name specifically what the students hate about peer review, because then you were talking about habits of mind and I'm thinking of like, okay, so how do you, is it possible to address the underlying distaste for peer review so that they even connect to the habits of mind that we're asking for? So then it's like, she talks about the potential barrier being assumptions about expertise, feeling like they don't have the expertise to help their peers, and then they just feel self-conscious and weird about like giving, like, which they probably should, like, feel like they're giving this like completely unwarranted advice or something. But then I was wondering if you, how, like, what I should have done this more, maybe what you guys do to strategize helping them almost like occupy the character of an expert.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Because then maybe they'll just do this sort of performative thing together. And then actually, yeah, you know, so.
Yeah. I had like a student who spoke about this. Like I've talked to my students during class, like about peer review. I'm lucky, like a lot of my, I have at least a few students who like participate pretty regularly. And I do, when I ask questions, often
like
get
a good
responses.
Group of the same, like four or five
yeah.
people. But I'm really thinking about those.
Yeah,
like,
the
14,
ones who don't
like...
tell you. Yeah.
yeah.
And I've gotten, like, part of the reason I decided to do so much peer review this second unit was because I got a lot of people who said if they found it helpful in their reflections and their writing journals and things. But I did have a student who said something like that, and another one did later. And I sort of opened it up to the class, and another student said something like, well, I mean, this is a policy presentation. We're supposedly like presenting this. We're imagining that we're presenting this to a group of people who is not experts. And I said, like, that's exactly right.
Oh, good point.
And the point I made had a lot to do with like what Gray was saying about clarity. Like I have, when I was applying for grad school, like, and at various other times in my life, the only people I know who were really accessible to read my work has been like my parents, for example. And the idea of giving your parents this complicated paper you've written about some topic they know nothing about, in some ways, what are they going to contribute? But a lot of times, like, what I'm really looking for in someone to read my work is, does it internally make sense? Like, which parts of it are confusing to you as a reader? Where does it feel like it doesn't fit together anymore and you're just baffled by what's going on? And so I tried to emphasize that to the students, that you don't have to be an expert. And the other student, it's not like they're a huge expert on this topic either. Yes, they've done more research than you, but it's not like they're a doctorate in this topic and you're just a first year. You're all first years, and a lot of what you can get is just from talking through your ideas and what's clear and unclear, and honestly reflecting on a lot of times the basics of the assignment as yeah. well, and like what the audience is. And so I feel like that I hope that that helps some of the students feel a little less self-conscious,
like just kind of like feel at the beginning that it's like, hey, you're actually not helping each other chase complexity or helping each other chase clarity.
I mean,
or...
like, it's great to chase, like, you can chase complexity or chase clarity, like whatever that looks like, but you don't have to be an expert to have a sense of like, do these ideas seem to fit together, am I confused?
Yeah.
I want to interject. I want to zoom back out. I think Simone said something about slowing down. And I like this idea of peer review as a means of slowing down, not just in the classroom, in the sense that, like, okay, this is a day where we're not being presented with any new information. Like, I'm not sitting there lecturing, or we're not reading a particularly difficult article, or you write, like, it's not new per se. And that kind of gives their brains a moment to breathe. But I think one of the things, too, about peer review, and I'll say my science section is specifically designed to slow down, because I think October and November, like October going November, really difficult months where people, I'm slowed down. I'm less energetic. The students, I asked them the other day, you know, my students typically are pretty, they participate quite a bit, and they were really quiet. And I said, what's going on with you guys? You know, you guys are really quiet and yeah, we're tired. So I think peer review is a really good opportunity to slow the class down, even if maybe they don't get anything out of it in terms of a, a deeper understanding of their own writing or their own paper, they are, it's a sort of moment to stop and breathe and maybe get a little rest in the classroom, which I think can be important too.
Yeah.
Where I'm thinking in the past when I've had more successful outings of peer review, I have invoked this idea that the peer review is almost more for the reviewer than it is for the person who's like getting their papers read. Because as you were kind of saying before, right, is this idea that like they can, but I have like explicitly said that to students in the past, which feels a little weird because you're setting up like, hey guys, like go get in groups, read each other's work, do a lot of this real important information to, you know, like work out what's going on in your peer's paper. Oh, by the way, the usefulness is actually interrogating your own work.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking like in this, despite my cynicism, I'm thinking through my mind as we're all talking like, oh, you know, I don't know why I've always envisioned peer review as the, oh, this is our one day of peer review, right? We have the big draft come in, we're going to do our big peer review, and then we're going to go ahead and turn in the final. Like, I could just be doing little bits of peer review, just like a 15, 20 minute bit of peer review. You came in with a homework assignment, you came in with a feeder exercise.
Yeah.
Let's peer review that and just get more into that habit. Because maybe that's a way of building some sort of expertise, or at least perceived expertise or familiarity.
I've done that a bit through the semester, but it's most, I ask them to get in groups and do a 5 minute elevator pitch about their topic, which is like mini peer review, I think, or like there's other little things like that that I don't even think I really planned it that much. It was just like at the beginning of class, I was like, they should talk to each other.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, and then I just like pair them off randomly. So I feel like,
that's important. Again, like one thing about what it's like to be a first year and like reading the writing journals from students, I asked them after the first unit in one of their reflections to talk about like, they could choose to talk about what the class environment was like for them and what was useful, like what wasn't. I, you know, trying to get some feedback and some thoughts on how to make things better for them. And a lot of them said, you know, this is my smallest class. Like, I like how this class is so small that I like know people. I'm in this huge lecture for my other classes. And I, or, you know, like the sense that this is their time to like actually know who other students are and feel like they can talk because they're not in a sea of like 100 other kids who they've never spoken to before. And so like, I don't know, I see 105 in a weird way as almost like a nursery in the sense of like, you know, where you grow up, like small plants or something like that. Like this sort of like slightly sheltered like environment. Like when I was getting ready to do their presentations, and I had a bunch of them do their 5 minute presentations on Wednesday, and then I'll have the other half on Monday. You know, I told them, this is the class, this is the place where you can drop your note cards. Like, don't be so stressed about being perfect. Like, this part of this is the practice of doing it. And I think it's something similar in a sense with peer review. So, like, maybe they're tired. And you can't, like, people's emotions and their mental well-being, how stressed they are, all of that impacts, like, how they're going to react to class one day. So, like, the day that Mitch, you were talking about, like, ineffective peer review or it was dissatisfying, like, maybe it was part of the assignment, but it also could just be where people are at in the semester and like the vibe, you know what I mean? Like it's kind of intangible, but part of it is trying to instill like, again, these habits of thinking about things, like trying to like have students see their peers as people they can talk to about their work and their assignments. There was a line in the article that said some students even worry that it's cheating to share their work with other students, or it's still like unclear whether that's allowed. And like, that's kind of upsetting to think about, but it also makes sense. Like, if you were sort of taught that your writing has to be only your work and anybody else, like, interferes with it, like, then, you know, then it's cheating. I think that, like, having students do peer review is another way of normalizing this sort of habit of sharing their work, talking about it, and not every discussion you have about what you're writing is helpful to you. Sometimes it isn't that helpful, but it's still a good habit to have, like, a good tool to feel that's, like, accessible to you.
Can I toss a comment in? I really like what I'm hearing. I'm hearing a whole bunch of different things, and I like all of it. But one thing that struck me, and I think it maybe had to do with the idea of the reviewer getting more out of this And I think there's actually three parties involved. There's the writer, the reviewer, and then the instructor. And tell me if this observation makes sense, because it feels really ironic to me that of all the things that happen in a first-year writing class, sometimes peer review might feel like the least student-centered, because the student shows up, today I don't have to do much, all I have to do, my paper's done, and the instructor hands you this handout and says, go through these five questions, and there's a kind of passivity to it is what I'm picking up on in some ways. And I'm wondering, with this idea of timing and metacognition that's coming up, how we might break that. Like, how would you flip it and say, you know, together we need to generate the rubric for this peer review, or tomorrow we're going to be doing peer review, help me, you know, you all are in charge of figuring out how that could be productive. So I'm just wondering about this sort of like passivity dynamic that seems ironic if this is actually the part where the peers are really supposed to be the most active.
That last sort of inversion that you gave there is very intriguing to me, because it is sort of okay, we're going to be doing peer review next class, and then they come to the next class with the draft, and I have up on the whiteboard or up on the screen, like, here are the list of things that you need to go through and look for. And perhaps the feeling that I got that is like, oh, they were just done very quickly, was because, well, okay, there's a question, check. There's a second question, check. There's a question, check. And that maybe some move to involve them more explicitly in the process of deciding what to look for might be helpful. That might be difficult, like, the first time. Maybe the more peer reviews you do, the easier it gets to involve.
I have less, I don't know if this is answering your question at all, Dan, but I have really non-specific questions and prompts that I ask of them. For instance, one of the ones for peer review, this last peer review I had was, what was something unexpected that you found? And it was asking, so I was asking the writer that wrote summaries for Feeder 2.2 of some government document relating to an endangered species. So I said, all right, I want the reviewer to basically give a conclusion of the summary they've read. See if it matches up with the reviewee's own conclusions of their own work. And then I asked the reviewee, was there anything that was surprising to you that you didn't realize about your own writing now that it's been read by another person? So that's an example of one of those kind of, yeah, open-ended, unexpected questions I like to, or open-ended questions I like to ask, generally about something ambiguous or unexpected. So it kind of forces them to not search for anything in particular, but maybe like map their own ideas. I almost said impose. I don't want to say impose. Map their own ideas onto the work that they're reviewing, rather than, you know, oh, this, you know, here's the thesis, here's the whatever, you know. So I don't know if that's getting at what you're saying at all, but
I like that too, because it leaves a little bit of flexibility open for them, because it's, you know, they're going to be focusing on tinkering with different things based on, you know, their own work and their own, you know, what they're adept at and what they're not as great at.
Yeah.
So I like sort of the open-endedness and it being less, I guess, prescriptive about, you know, okay, you have to look out for this, because then, you know, that sometimes can make them feel like, you know, okay, well, this is a checklist, and, you know, whether I have to look for this thing in this piece of writing, whether it's there or not, you know, rather than kind of just like looking at each piece as its own separate entity. So,
yeah. Mitch, you were about to say, I was going to say, I definitely think we're talking about checklist. And I think that is the word that I would use for, I think, how some students were reacting to my initial peer review worksheets, because they were so specific. And both of my first assignments, like, it's important to me that my students are learning, like, research skills. And that's partly just because of the first two units. The focus of them has been, like, research heavy. So it'll look different for the humanities unit. But in response to what Dan was just asking, like, I think that the article sort of touches on that. And I think, I
can't remember where exactly, but there's something it says about students coming with their own questions about what they want feedback on. Mm-hmm. And so I think that could be a really helpful way to sort of approach this differently. So asking students to come with one question, at least, to ask their peer reviewer to keep in mind, to sort of focus.
That would be, yeah. Their feedback. That's a really good out for the expertise or the issue as well. Or it's like, it's not like giving unwarranted advice if they've warranted it.
Yeah. It's like a question, and it could be something about like, oh, like they don't understand how to do this part of the assignment. And if that's the case, then that's okay. And they can talk to the other student and then speak to me if they have questions. But I do think that giving them some more agency in what they're getting out of it would be really helpful. And I think the essay even mentioned that, like, when she has her students turn in papers, she'll have them include some sort of reflection that talks about what they got out of the peer review and sort of what they brought into their final submission, something along those lines. And so I'm also thinking about ways that it could sort of become something that's combined with other types of feedback that they get, and sort of coming back to the feedback instead of just making it like, oh, today we do this and now we never think about it again, which feels more like busy work. But how can we get students to sort of take feedback more slowly and consciously?
So before I came to UNC, and I was working as a graduate advisor in the School of Art at UGA, and there was this really popular studio art critique, I don't know, master of critique, not working there, but whom one of our professors used in his critique class pretty regularly, named Liz Lerman, who set up critique in a similar way to what you suggested, Charlotte, and that each artist comes to the critique with a list of things they do want to be questioned about, a list of things they don't want to be questioned about, a list of what I found actually was, and what I think some of the other faculty found, was that was actually incredibly limiting, because then students were sort of setting the boundaries for what could and couldn't be discussed, and it was sort of creating these weird, self-protective, creating these weird, stilted, staunched conversations, critiques, and faculty were sort of like, well, what do you need me for then? Like, if you don't care about my expertise and you don't want what, you know, and perhaps there's some ego involved there too, but I think it does have to be, I'm not foreclosing it as a productive thing entirely, but I think you do have to balance it.
Be careful that you're not, like, it's like the difference between, like, a boundary and, like, a, I don't know, maybe a or something.
Rule is a rule.
I don't know if you guys do this for peer review, but certainly before the first sort of main session of peer review that I have in a class, I will do like a question answer, like setting up norms and like expectations and sort of guidelines for what we as a class would like peer review to look like. Now I'm thinking of your previous comment about imposition. But you know, one of the things that I feel quite strongly about in terms of like setting up these norms and guidelines is like, I don't ever want students changing writing in another student's writing. Like, one of the things that is like, that I have to be explicit to point out is like, you can use the like notes, the comments feature, you could maybe use the suggestions feature, but even that feels invasive. And I just wonder, like, do you guys find a usefulness in guidelines like that? Do you talk about that sort of stuff? Like, I'm thinking just like nuts and bolts of what do we do in a period.
I think that like giving them options is good, like giving them like, because they usually what they want is like a template to move from. So I think saying something like, one, if you want to retool their prose, maybe instead put a comment that says, how about, like, quote, this other way that I might put this. And I think that empowers them for sure.
I made a similar observation as I was reading the article to you, Mitch, about that. And this may sound like, you know, it should be common sense, but I feel it's important to, before your first round of peer review, to, you know, give some feedback. And of course, you know, the way that my class is structured, my first drafts are not graded. I just grade the finals. So I feel it's important to give them a round of instructor feedback on that first assignment before they jump into peer review. And that way, you kind of set up your expectations as an instructor and you give them an idea of what they each should be personally working on. So it's like, okay, you know, Tommy has a problem with grammar. Michael has a problem with, you know, clarity and passive voice. And, you know, so it's like,
get Tommy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
get them on the line.
The question of, I think, modeling is very useful to like sort of model what a review can look like, if not a peer review.
Yeah.
There's some weird power dynamics going on there when I tell Tommy that he doesn't know what a comma is.
Well, I think that's interesting. The modeling thing is really interesting because I'm realizing like when I grade papers, that's kind of what I'm doing outside of things that are just incorrect grammatically that I'll highlight and tell them. I don't grade for grammar, but I highlight and say this is wrong. But I noticed that my strategy for grading is I'll often ask them questions. How might you blank? How might one, whatever, how could you get at this argument? Rather than providing the answer, I'm asking them to find the answer for themselves in whatever way makes sense for them as a writer. The issue with that obviously being they're not going to have that kind of modeling until after the final essay. So if they're doing peer review for the first one, yeah, you do have to have these kind of guidelines. But then after that, you know, I think I often wonder how much our students, because I think there's something to be said about this too. We're all young people and our students are slightly younger people, right? Like a decade-ish, if more for me, but I guess. But they probably, in a way, look up to us. And so, like...
Terrifying.
I know, terrifying. But we might be more role model-y than we realize.
I've had role model-y. I've been realizing that over and over again throughout the semester. It's more like they really are like looking at me or something. Like just are like I'm really being perceived like more than I understand.
Yeah.
And that like this is and that like there's
as a new teacher.
It's like, or that like they're not used because this is new, like because we're used to us or something and they're not. And it's like this really is your like first encounter with like a weird graduate student who's like yelling at you or I don't know.
That's true.
I don't know, it's fun, like, but
yeah. I guess we are then, as you're saying, like way more implicated in this process of peer review than I literally, before I went to class on Monday, I turned to my partner before I left. I was like, I have to go do a peer review. And she's like, oh, that's fine. I was like, no, I mean, I just sit there. And like, I tell them what to do and I just sit there. Which is a little like tongue in cheek,
but it's better that you are passive. It's better that you're not like, okay, so then what are you saying?
Yeah, and I'm like sitting over them.
Yeah, like,
basically.
Did you say Tommy had bad grammar?
But perhaps we are a little bit more a part of that experience than it seems, even when I'm sitting at the desk reading some article myself to sort of pass the time. I'm also sort of like weirdly very much a piece of that experience.
I have an odd number of students and I put them in duos, which meant one of the students had to work with me. One of them, I know, yes, but that's what I kind of like made that kind of a bit though, where I paired them all off and I was like, and you know what, I'm just realizing, I was like, one of you needs to work with me. and then a silence fell and everyone just kind of like receded into their chair. But there was one student who was like, I'll work with you, like he wanted to.
Yeah
I know. I was like, I acted like so shocked, you know, like, oh, you guys are like, nobody wants my professional feedback, but this is free editing, like, what do you mean? And it was very silly, so.
Yeah, but I think our psychological state and what we bring into the class, they're mirroring that. Like, when I had my class observation, one nice thing that I wasn't expecting to hear was that I brought a lot of energy to the classroom, and I was like, oh, I didn't think about that at all. Like, that wasn't on my list of things that I was thinking about. But I do think you sense that, like, I'm still very much a student. I feel like a student when I go to my classes.
Absolutely.
And the way I relate to professors now is still like, oh, this professor is great and I like them. Like, I feel it, you know, like you really pick up on that stuff. And I don't know, I'm thinking I'm going to have a new sort of hybrid peer review approach that includes a lot of different things instead of just, you know, closed questions, instead of only open-ended questions, and instead of just saying what you want to hear about, because it's good for students to hear about things that they don't necessarily see in their own writing too.
Yeah.
But I do think giving them some more agency can also be empowering for the
problem. I'm going to be thinking about student agency as I go into class on Monday. Yeah. I'm going to find a way to bring it back. Well, I mean,
been gone for
that sounded
long.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've let my students make a single choice.
Well, this has been an incredibly generative conversation, and what I really like about it is I think room to grow is like one of these amazing dynamics that you find when you're teaching and you recognize there's room to grow. And then when the growth happens, you just feel really fulfilled, or this is a measure of success. And what I heard was that there's so much room to grow around peer review. And I really am enthused about that. It's a nice kind of balm for the cynicism that comes up with teaching, because I think the counter to that is there is a lot of mechanical implementation of peer review, which is okay. It's going to keep the writing process moving and it gives an activity for the day. But this extra room is so much more exciting and intriguing. And, you know, how can we use it to build agency? How can we use it to change the time dimensions of a 50-minute class and have it start the class before or get picked up on the class afterwards? There's so many different pieces of it. And this is what I really like about it, is because I'm always aware of the labor challenges of teaching first-year composition. And there's a lot of writing going on in there, and it needs to be processed. It needs to have feedback. It needs to be revised. And if one person is doing that, the instructor, it's overwhelming. But all of this room to grow means that not only does that help with this challenge of there's just a lot of work to be done, it actually takes that work and moves it into something that hopefully becomes productive, intellectual, valuable for the students. So I don't think we landed on a formula, because there probably isn't a formula, but we landed on a whole bunch of possibilities. And I could even see the problem with teaching these classes is there's 18 different things to do and 12 different pedagogical models you can be implementing. And I could even say, okay, one semester, I'm just really going to focus on peer review. This is going to be English 105 / peer review. And could you imagine, I'm going to, you know, all of these different possibilities, you could spend 15 weeks trying to figure out how could I really make that a productive piece. And at the same time, it's going to help you manage what you're trying to do in these classes. So thank you all. I really enjoyed this conversation. All of our listeners, I hope you'll tune in next time for another episode of Teach Right.